What's my name?
Mr.
What's my name?
Mr. Charles.
What's my name?
Mr. Charles.
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. And today, we start day three of our Infant Toddler Conscious Discipline Conference, where I talk about the things we talked about during the day. I am going to bring you to this conference. I'm going to give you a condensed version because obviously you're not experiencing it exactly because this is a whole day event. But I'm condensing the information in about 30 to 45 minutes so that you can come along on the journey with us and hopefully learn and grow along with us. And today we're going to be talking about mental models. We're going to be talking about attachment styles. We're going to be talking about routines, rituals, visuals, and we're going to be talking about baby doll circle time. So let's get into it. And I'm going to give you the condensed version of it because it's a lot. This is Wednesday, is the day of the week. And Wednesday of the CD1 is always described as Weeping Wednesdays because this is the day where we go deep and unpack a lot. So there's a lot of conversation at the tables. There's a lot of sharing, being vulnerable. Even if you're not sharing out loud, it's hard to be in the room and not think about, you know, the way that we were raised and what we received and what we didn't receive and our mental, talking about our mental models and our attachment style can be very personal. So I'm just going to give you the tidbits of it, but let's start with the mental models. What are mental models? Mental models are assumptions, generalizations, and images which are rooted deeply in our minds as a way of understanding our world, ourselves, and others. You know, it's how we represent, it's how life works, how things go. And these mental models are deeply ingrained in us. They are formed from the time that we're very young, before we're able to really critically think and discern between what is going to be helpful for us and what might be hurtful for us. But our mental models are really formed to protect us. And they're given to us by the adults in our lives. And we don't really have much control of that when we're young. However, and it's also important to recognize that these mental models are unconscious. They are unconscious biases, right? And as we get older, we have the capacity and the opportunity to become aware of some of our mental models. And I'm going to give some examples of mental models in just a moment. We have an opportunity to become aware of our mental models and then make a conscious choice about how we're going to navigate the world with these mental models, right? And maybe even construct some new ones, some different ways of seeing the world. We don't have to be stuck in them, but these mental models really do stick with us, right? It's not something that we just, become conscious of and then there we can just set them on a shelf somewhere and then we go out and we leave our mental models at home. That is not how it works. We carry our mental models with us. We have an opportunity to shape and form them and become conscious of them and make intentional choices and navigate around them. But we do carry our mental models with us. So let me give you some examples of mental models because you might be like, okay, I don't get it. I don't really understand. I feel like I don't have any mental models. I see the world as it is, right? And so if that is what your position is and what you're thinking, it's likely that there is maybe some work to do to become more aware and conscious of what your mental models actually are, because we all have them, whether they're helpful or hurtful, right? So some common unconscious mental models are: I have to be perfect in order to be loved. Ooh, that perfectionism, right? If you are a self-described perfectionist, this is likely one of your unconscious or conscious mental models. I have to be perfect in order to be loved. And often the way that we inadvertently pass that those mental models down as adults is we shame and chastise children when they make mistakes, as opposed to really seeing them as an essential part of the learning process and responding to their mistakes with empathy and love and understanding. And instead, we maybe respond or react to their mistakes with punishment, with saying, you know, go to timeout and think about what you did and don't come back until, you know, you're not making mistakes anymore, until you're happy again, right? So you don't make any mistakes. And so this may have happened to many of us. And so this is why a lot of us have this mental model of we need to be perfect in order to be loved. And if I'm not perfect, or I do make a mistake, you know, maybe you're hiding the mistake and you don't feel comfortable sharing your mistake because of how people may perceive or see you. So another mental model is I'm worthless, right? I'm not worthy of love. I'm not worthy. Worthiness is something a lot of people struggle with. Another one is you can't trust anyone. You can't trust anyone. And one of the examples that people were saying at my table today, and even heard in kind of large group of a lot of how a lot of parents or mother-in-laws or whoever will say to children and say, you know, don't go outside because someone's going to snatch you up. Someone's going to hurt you. Someone's going to take you away, right? And wow, this comes from good intentions of wanting to protect and care for children and make sure that they're safe. This can set up a mental model of I can't trust anyone, right? And thinking about, you know, stranger, you know, I can't trust any stranger at all. And while we want to be cautious, you know, around people that we don't know, it's more important to teach children about certain behaviors that aren't safe, rather than every person that you don't know is a bad guy, right? Or someone who is not worthy of trust or talking to or interacting with, because they will hurt you. Okay. Another one is other cultures are scary and should be like my culture, right? That is a lot of people grow up with that mental model of, you know, there is one right way to do it. And this, again, is something that is passed down from the adults, right? And sometimes this happens by when adults mock other cultures, mock people who do things differently, and ridicule them or mock them or shame them or just generally aren't open to what other cultures have to offer. And so this is a mental model that can be passed down. And a lot of times it may not be something explicitly said that, like, you might not say that, you know, Black people are aggressive and can't be trusted and will harm you. There may not be something that is said out loud, but maybe even when you're crossing the street and a Black person walks by and you hold, you know, your child a little closer, you squeeze their hand a little tighter, right? Children can feel that and they notice these things. And it's something that's very subtle. And so we really need to, and even that adult may not be, you know, their perception of themselves are, I, you know, see everyone as equals and, you know, and I have no negative biases towards anyone. I see everyone as the same. And in reality, there are maybe some mental models that were passed down from them. And this is not even just with parents. It is also, or teachers, it's also with, you know, media that we consume that can influence our mental models. Another mental model can be, and this is some maybe more helpful mental models, that mistakes make me human, not bad, right? And this can happen by us, you know, responding empathetically. You know, we respond empathetically and non-judgmentally when children make mistakes, then they can get this mental model of mistakes make me human, not bad. And they, when they're older, they won't have to carry around the mental model of I have to be perfect in order to be loved, right? They already come with the reaction to themselves when they make a mistake is already different because of what was shaped when they were very young, how they were responded to when they were very young. Another mental model might be I'm worthy, right? Or maybe I trust my intuition. So these are some mental models that a lot of us have or have experienced or maybe have even passed down unconsciously or maybe even consciously. Okay, so let's talk attachment system. And this could be a whole podcast episode in itself, and I probably will do a whole podcast episode about attachment. But I'm going to give you a brief little overview of attachment. Right? And attachment is, the attachment system is meant to protect the person. It's designed to protect, especially the infant, a child, right, from danger. And the attachment system helps the infant find, the infant or young child find safety so that they can go and explore and do all the things that they need to do for their little brains to grow and develop in the healthiest, most helpful way possible to that will create lots of connections in their brain that will give them lots of choices later on in life because they will have so many connections in their brain and they'll be able to, you know, have a secure attachment. And really at the crux of it, will help us learn how to have healthy relationships. It will condition us for healthy relationships if we have a secure attachment. Now, if we have an anxious attachment or a disorganized attachment or an avoidant attachment, then it will wire us for some pretty unhealthy behaviors in adulthood when it comes to navigating relationships. The goal of the attachment system is to turn on when the infant feels threatened. The infant then signals and uses strategies to seek proximity to an attachment figure, right? And if you're the parent, this is you. And if you're a teacher in the classroom, this is you or will be you if you haven't kind of created that security and safety with the child yet. It can be you. And once they do seek, and I've seen this so many times as someone, as an educational specialist, where my goal was to go to different schools and really work with some of the most challenging behaviors. I would often go into a classroom, an infant or toddler classroom, and they may not have known me because I wasn't around all the time and I wasn't their security. I come in and they're like, whoa, who is this guy? I don't know them. And they go to their teacher, right? And this is a very healthy behavior. They will walk or crawl or put their arms towards their teacher saying, hey, I want to be in close proximity with you because I want to feel safe. And they are built where they come with this. And so this is actually a really powerful system that is built within infants. And then once they establish that felt sense of safety, then they will be able to really learn again and really they will be able to open up their brain, kind of reach that part of their brain, the prefrontal lobes, to kind of start learning and making connections in the brain and to really do all the things that really infants and toddlers need to be doing for healthy development. And so it's a cycle that happens, right? This is cycle where they experience distress, their attachment system activates, they seek comfort from an attachment figure, then they experience stress reduction, a felt sense of safety, because they're in their safe place. Now, when they're very young, that safe place is the child's, well, let's actually bring it back. This, the original safe place is the womb, right? And then it becomes the caregiver's lap, right? And then it's the caregiver's arm, right? It's the caregiver is the safe place. And then as they get older, like outside of toddler, when they, you know, kind of more preschool age, we start to create a safe place outside of that human caregiver. However, that caregiver, even at 3, 4, right, that human, their primary attachment figure is their primary caregiver in that moment, who they feel connected and safe with, is that is their safe place, right? But we start to kind of give children as they get older into the kind of preschool years, start to give them more skills, because they have capacity for more skills, so that they don't have to always rely on their primary caregiver to experience safety. And so that over time, and the expectation, let me be clear, the expectation isn't, okay, you're 3 now, you should know how to self-regulate by yourself. No, that skill isn't fully developed till 25, 26. The capacity for that skill isn't fully developed till 25, 26, right? But it's we're starting to really practice that, right? Whereas before the preschool years, we're not even starting with that expectation very much. Now, we might have a little bit of a safe place in the toddler years to kind of start introducing it to them, but they will still need that person most of the time. They experience that false sense of safety, then their attachment system deactivates. And once your attachment system deactivates and they feel safe, now they can return to their interests and their activities, and they can explore and manipulate toys, and they can point at things. You know, they can do all the things that they need to do for their body and brain to grow. And it'll happen again. They'll experience the stress. Their attachment system will activate. They'll seek comfort. They'll get that from their, you know, safe place. And they'll feel that felt sense of safety. Their attachment system will deactivate, and then they'll return to their interests, and their brain can be at maximum capacity for learning and receiving information. And so this is really important, because a lot of times when their attachment system activates, we have this thing of like, you're being a baby, we're spoiling the child, and that's simply, you can't spoil a baby, right? It's okay to baby a baby. I actually have shirts that says it's okay to baby a baby. They're very limited. I actually will sell them. If you listen to this podcast, it's something very exclusive. I don't necessarily, advertising them out to the world, because I have very limited shirts. But if you message me, and you listen to this podcast, and you got this far, you have the privilege of getting an It's Okay to Baby a Baby shirt. It's only $20 plus shipping, and I will send it to you. It's something that's very exclusive. If that's something that you want, maybe you have an in-law who says you're spoiling your child, and you want to communicate to them with a visual without having to actually say it to them. You know, we get tired of repeating ourselves over and over, but visuals will never get tired. There's a little cute picture on it with the baby that's kind of like grasping, pretty much for their caregiver. And it says, it's okay to baby a baby. So if you want that, message me. And I know that you're kind of in this secret club of people who have made it this far in the podcast episode. And you'll be able to get that before. Maybe at some point I'll make it open to the public. And maybe the first few people will get it. But right now I'm only making it available to you. So moving on. That is really... the most, that's the important thing for you to know about attachment. Now, I could go deeper into attachment, and I think I will talk about the different kinds of attachment very briefly, and then we're going to move on. So with an anxious attachment style, we often have a fear of abandonment, right? And with this fear, we're constantly afraid of being alone and having no closeness. We often cling but don't trust our partner. We don't leave them alone and misunderstand their need for alone time, thinking it means you don't love me. You know, and our sense of self is sacrificed for the maintenance of the relationship. Now, some common phrases we might say or think, it might be a part of our mental models are, you know, I want what you want, right? Or I like what you like. I don't care. It's up to you. I don't know. Whatever you think. These are signs or signals that you may have an anxious attachment style. And so one of the ways that we actually create this anxious attachment style, I actually will share kind of an example of what may happen. So let's say a toddler is stepped on by another toddler, or pushed or bumped or whatever it is, or bitten, or someone, they take their toy, whatever it is, right? Something happens to the toddler. The threat provokes fear and anxiety, turning the attachment system on. The toddler seeks out their attachment figure, and the caregiver responds inconsistently, sometimes attuned, sometimes not. And then we respond, you're okay. You know, let's find something else to play with. This increases the child's insecurity and anxiety. And to manage his anxiety, the toddler demands more attention from his attachment figure. The toddler's exploration is dampened by his obsession with the attachment relationship. And over time, this becomes a mental model of anxious relationships where the I is sacrificed by the we. And what I mean when I say the I is sacrificed by the we, it's your you-ness, your uniqueness is sacrificed. Who you are and the core of who you are is sacrificed to try really to maintain that closeness, that connection, right? Okay, now let's talk about another attachment style, the avoidant attachment style. And this often is characterized by a fear of intimacy, right? If you have a fear of intimacy, then you might have an avoidant attachment style. And with this fear, you're constantly afraid of losing your sense of self, right? And so it's on the other end of the spectrum. It's not fear of abandonment, it's the fear of intimacy. So instead, on with the anxious attachment style, we were afraid of losing the we, right? We got to be together. And with this avoidant attachment style, I'm afraid of losing the me, right? Your sense of self, right? And, you know, this might be characterized, you might have this attachment style if, you know, maybe you work long hours and refuse to make commitments or pull away into books or hobbies or interests, and sometimes misunderstand our partner's need for time together and closeness. And sometimes we might think you're suffocating or you're smothering me, right? And my mind is like, I just need some space, right? Our sense of self is more important than the relationship, right? And we might be, you know, if we say things like, I need space a lot, or, you know, there's nothing wrong with having hobbies and, you know, loving golf, and I'm not around as much because I work long and hard for the family. I mean, I love you. Isn't that enough? We don't need commitment, right? These are things that someone who has an avoidant attachment style might say. And you see, these are the opposite ends of the spectrum, and there needs to be the balance there. And we'll talk about what that balance actually looks like. But how do we actually end up creating this avoidant attachment style? So let's kind of do the similar scenario, like a toddler maybe stepped on, bit, pushed, whatever it is. The threat creates fear and anxiety, turning the attachment system on, as it does, as it's supposed to do. The toddler seeks out their attachment figure, as they're supposed to do. The caregiver responds negatively. You're fine. Stop crying. And then ignores the child. This increases the child's insecurity and anxiety. And over time, the toddler gives up on getting a positive, attuned response. To manage their fear and anxiety, the toddler focuses on object play and distances themselves from relationships. Over time, this becomes a mental model for relationships where the we is sacrificed to maintain the me or the I, right? And what we really want, ideally, is to create a secure attachment style. And the way we create it would be a toddler is stepped on by other toddlers and cries, threat provoked, fear, anxiety, turning attachment system off. The toddler seeks out the attachment figure. The caregiver responds with attunement and might validate the emotions and be with them in that moment, right? And really see the world from that child's perspective and provide a felt sense of safety. And they might do that by saying something like, "That was scary. Two friends stepped on you. I'll hold you and keep you safe. Breathe with me. You're safe now." This increases security and regulates the toddler's physiology, turning the attachment system off, which then turns the exploration system on. And the toddler goes back to playing and exploring. And over time, this becomes a mental model of secure relationships where the I and the we are balanced. Now, there's also something called disorganized attachment, which I'm not going to go too deep into because it's not the general population, but you may be able to recognize it if you see if there's a child at age six who's maybe they've been parentified and they're kind of taking on that parental role and they're acting like the parent for their parent, right? But as an adult, for anxious attachment, you might notice that they, you know, don't want to be close to others or worry that the partner doesn't love them or becomes really distraught when a relationship ends. Now, for avoidant attachment, as an adult, may have problems with intimacy or invest little emotion in social and romantic relationships or unable or unwilling to share thoughts and feelings with others. So if that sounds like you, you might have an avoidant attachment style. Okay, now visuals. Now, in visuals, when it comes to visuals, they can be very helpful, especially for young children, or especially for children who aren't speaking yet. Visuals are very, very, very powerful, and I cannot overemphasize that. I actually, because they're so powerful, some of you may know that I have a visual schedule, a Mr. Chaz visual schedule that's more for older children. It's not for infants and toddlers, more for preschool and older, that you can look at the link in my bio. I might put it in the show notes here. But you can get a visual schedule if you have an older children, and they really help children kind of move through transitions, understand what's happening, and it helps create a felt sense of safety so that children are able to explore and get that secure attachment and really know what to expect. Visuals can be very helpful. And another thing too is that we get tired of repeating ourselves all day. You know what doesn't get tired of repeating themselves? A visual. So I really recommend visuals. An acronym that we use when we're talking about using visuals and helping children with routines, and that's where visuals can be really, 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 really powerful in the routines and just kind of like getting from point A to point B. Something that is like a conscious discipline acronym. You know, we got all these acronyms, is MAP. It stands for Model, Add Visuals, and Practice. So especially if you are in a classroom, but even with your children, and I don't even, I mean, really for everyone, for parents, for teachers, mapping it out is really, 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 really helpful for getting children to follow a routine. If you're finding maybe when they come in from home from school that, you know, maybe you expect them to put their shoes in a certain place and do a certain thing, but they have a hard time with that. Or maybe the transition, you know, you're in a school, the transition from lunch to nap, or just lunch to academics, or arrival and the reunion. Maybe those are hard times for some of your children. Map it out. MAP stands for Model, Add Visuals, and Practice. Model exactly what you expect for them to do. Add visuals on what that actually looks like. And it's bonus points if they're in the pictures doing that thing. This can also be very helpful for bedtime. And then practice going through that. And when I say practice, I mean literally just going through the motions with them of what that will happen. Because a lot of times we'll say it, but it's in one ear and out the other. And so the visuals will kind of help them hold that information, and then actually going through it and letting their body going through the motions of that will help them and really remember and go through that with success. And so map it out. Model, add visuals, and practice. Okay, baby doll circle time. I'm just going to give you a little brief little touch on baby doll circle time. So baby doll circle time. Really the goal of it is to enhance attachment, to increase self-regulation, promote trust through joyful interactions, and foster attunement skills in caregivers. And if you heard the episode yesterday, you heard me talk about how important that serve and return was, and those, how those interactions are what build the baby toddler's brain, so that they can learn and grow and really have all the options in life that can be available to them because they have healthy brain development. And so baby doll circle time is something that you can do as a parent and something you can do as a teacher. And it really consists of getting a baby doll. And really, if you have an infant, then you can just, the infant is the baby doll, right? And you can kind of just do this with your infant. And so they can kind of start to get what that feels like. And really what you're doing is you're teaching the infant, you're giving the infant the experience of baby doll circle time, of that attunement and what that connection looks like. Connection has four components. And you don't always have to do all four for the connection to be present, but touch, eye contact, playful situation, and presence. And baby doll circle time, it is filled with connection. And so you can do the baby doll circle time with your infant, and they will have that experience. And as they become toddlers and you've done that with them over and over again, then that's when you get the baby doll. And then you can have a baby doll, and they can have a baby doll, or maybe they have a stuffed animal and you have a stuffed animal, or a baby doll, a stuffed animal. And they can do the baby doll circle time that you did with them. They do it to the baby, right? And so they start to learn how to attune and connect. And this is really powerful, teaching toddlers this, because that means that we especially have a classroom full of toddlers. I'm actually working in a classroom right now where it's about, there's 18 2-year-olds. It can be hectic sometimes and a lot of emotions. And sometimes with, just two of us in the room, it can be hard to meet everyone's needs. But how powerful is it if not only is it just the two caregivers, but it's also all 16, or maybe even if 8 of them just are learning these skills of connection and start to kind of connect with each other in this way, and then really helping each other regulate and building connections in brains, in each other's brains, right? So this can be a really powerful practice. But what is it? So I'll tell you the steps of it. And the step one is get the babies, right? It's pretty simple. Get the babies. And then you also kind of sing a song. And you do it very slow, because a lot of times we have a tendency sometimes to sing very fast. So it could sound like, get your baby, get your baby, get your baby time to play. Get your baby, get your baby, get your baby time to play. And then grab the baby and you pull out the baby. Maybe it's the first time you do it, they just pull out the baby and then you put it back up. You know, and I consider that to be a win. But we can build as this is a routine, we can build in this. And the more we do it, the more connection in their brains that it's going to make, the more neural pathway connections we're going to make, and the more they'll be able to do. And so step two, you might put the baby in our arms, and we're kind of creating this awareness with them. My baby's in my arms. My baby's in my arms. this is my baby. My baby's in my arms. And so we're going very slow. And now this is, we're helping them kind of create awareness. And even, you know, this age group, we talk a lot about, you know, children identifying body parts. And this is something that you can very organically even start to teach them. And might say something like, my baby's on my lap. My baby's on my lap. This is my baby. My baby's on my lap. My baby's on my head. Right? You can do, you can go a lot of ways with it, right? It doesn't have to be long. It can be as long. You really follow the children's lead with this, right? And step three, right? It's more connections, right? You could, you're kind of playing a game here. Like, all around I look. Where's my baby? Maybe you put it behind your back. Oh, I look behind my back and baby was hiding. You might do it again. Put it behind your back. Where's my baby? There he is. Right? It can be short, simple, right? And then maybe go step four, right? Go back into singing. My baby's being rocked. My baby's being rocked. This is my baby. My baby's being rocked. And this is kind of the teaching them almost self-regulation skills, co-regulation and regulation skills, right? And these are things that, you know, if you're doing with an infant, you'd be rocking them, right? And then, but they can do it with their baby, and they're learning how to kind of co-regulate. excuse me, my baby's being, you know, my baby's being touched, and maybe just touching their hands, right? And then step five, it's the transition to put the baby away. And it might sound like, bye-bye, baby, bye-bye, baby, bye-bye, baby, we'll play again someday. You might sing it in, bye-bye, baby, bye-bye, baby, bye-bye, baby, we'll play again someday. And that's baby doll circle time, right? It doesn't have to be long. It'd be much shorter than what I just did. I don't even know how long that took. You can kind of rewind and see how long that was. I did a little explaining in the beginning. It can be shorter than that, right? It could be longer than that. Really follow your child's lead in that. And you will create a secure attachment with your child. Teach them regulation skills. You will create trust within them, and we will help them grow in a healthy and effective and in such a powerful and impactful way. So I hope you enjoyed this day three, this Weeping Wednesday of the Infant Toddler Conscious Discipline Conference series, where every day I come to you with what we learned. Someone actually came up to me today and said, I'm so thankful for what you're doing. You know, I was able to come to the conference, but a lot of other people weren't. And so I'm actually going to use your podcast episodes as something you weren't able to come with us. But this is like a little mini version that you can get that's free, right? And there, you know, there's also stuff that you can get on Conscious Discipline that you can pay for. You know, you can get the, even the baby doll circle time, you can get all the curriculum and all the information, all that stuff. Remember, you can always use my promo code and get free shipping, Chaz23, C-H-A-Z-Z-2-3, and get free shipping on any Conscious Discipline materials. So I know I'm getting some baby doll circle time stuff. It's going to be ordered for me. Hopefully it's there for me by the time I come back. I'm told that the shipping is pretty quick, so there's not a lot of wait time. I really, really hope this was helpful. And I'll see you again tomorrow. Have a great day. Bye. Bye-bye, listeners. Bye-bye, listeners. Bye-bye, listeners. We'll talk again someday.
What's my name? What's my name?
What's my